Members, good afternoon. I would like to call the this version of the Human Services Finance Committee to order for March 30th, 2023. We do not have any notes for today. And members, the only items on the agenda for today is House File 2847. Thank you, Chair Knorr, for being here, and welcome. We do have minutes. We have a volunteer to do the minutes. Chair Fisher, would you like to move the minutes for March 28th, 2023?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the approval of the minutes for March 28th, 2023.
All right, thank you. So moved. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the ayes have it, and the minutes have been moved. Apologies. Then we will move on to House File 2847. We will move that before the Mr. Chair, would you like to move the bill before the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 2847 to be re-referred to Ways and Means Committee.
Perfect. Chair Knorr moves that House File 2847 be re-referred to Ways and Means. It looks like, Chair Knorr, we do have an author's amendment, the DE1. Would you like to go ahead and move your amendment?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move DE1 amendment.
Perfect. The DE1 is moved before the amendment to get in the shape that the author wants. Would you like to say anything to the amendment, Chair Knorr?
Madam Chair, members, in the interest of time, this is the DE1 walkthrough that we had with the fiscal staff, nonpartisan staff, and also had hearing to hear from the advocates and testify. So this, nothing has changed in the DE1.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Knorr. And the DE, we'll go ahead. Is there any discussion to the DE1?
I have an amendment to the DE1.
I'm sorry. All right. It sounds like we would like to, the chair would like to take up the A4 first. To the which is the amendment to the amendment. Chair Knorr, would you like to explain the A4?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. The A4 amendment before you it has some technical changes, starting with page 1. As you can see, we are fixing some technical issues. And on page 2, this addresses the New Americans Long-Term Care Workforce Grants, just some clearing of the language that was originally introduced in the bill. On page 3, it actually provides some guidance for the commissioner for the corporate foster care moratorium exceptions. Also, we have the budget increases for the CDCS on page 3. We have also further technical amendments, changes to page 4 and 5. We have some additional articles that were added in 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Madam Chair, members, page 10 also adds a new language based on what we have already on the DE1, based on evidence-based training, and also elaborates the grants, how it should be appropriated. Page 11, Madam Chair, members, also has some few technical changes. Page 12, Article 7, brings licensing. This is for receivership, so it goes from page 12, 13, 14, 16, 17, 18, 19, up to page 20. And then we do have appropriation changes from page 20, 21, 22, and 23. And Madam Chair, members, I think there's also a quick correction. I don't know how we will proceed with that. It's on line 23.13. If you look at that, there was an omission of how addition came out. It's supposed to be addiction, so there's a missing C there. That may require an oral amendment, and I just wanted to check with nonpartisan staff.
Thank you, Ms. Buchanan.
Madam Chair and members, on page 23, lines 13 and 15, the motion would be to delete addition and insert addiction.
Parliamentary advice, I think at the end of this, we will actually, usually at the end of an omnibus, we say we direct nonpartisan staff to make any technical corrections. And I believe if everyone's all right with that, that's the plan to fix this piece.
Madam Chair, the AFO amendment is before you.
Okay. So do we need to do the Okay. All right. Is there any discussion then? We will go ahead and move to discussion of the A4 amendment. Is there any discussion to the A4 amendment? All right, seeing none, we will move to, for a motion to adopt the A4 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. I will renew the motion to adopt the A4 amendment to the DE1, and we will move on to the next. Before you, members, we have the A5 amendment to the DE1 amendment. Can I inquire who's? All right, Representative Baker, would you like to speak to the A5?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair. Thank you so much, and members. I've got a series of amendments today that I'm really proud to bring forward to you. This is an important one that we want to talk about, and I've been visiting with a number of members on the majority side as well about how important this issue is with the OPIP program, the Opioid Prescribing Improvement Plan. This was something that a number of us worked on a couple years ago, and it was really important when prescribing was still out of hand. Providers needed some guidance. There were no really rules in the world of that at that time, and Minnesota along the whole time of opioids and the epidemic that we saw at its absolute worst was actually doing better than most states in the country. Our doctors have been paying more attention than most, but this program was brought forward with a prescribing working group of doctors and others. And what this amendment does, Madam Chair, is it eliminates what we now know is a better system, because what's happened is tapering is complex. Tapering opioids is critical to getting people with chronic pain settle down real slowly, but also it allows providers that know pain better than anybody, certainly better than anybody at DHS, to let them provide their medicine, their training, because they know what they're doing. And in the last few years, we have been in a number of meetings with the OPIP group under DHS. We gave them some authority to help doctors see where they land in their discipline area of medicine. They have been responding very, very well. And if you've seen some of the mapping and the examples of what we're doing in Minnesota, our prescribing is down significantly. And it isn't just because they're stopping, but what has happened, however, is with federal CDC guidelines, with the knowledge of what opioids are doing, the CDC for quite some time was getting hung up around the MMEs, the morphine milligram equivalents. And that is a line that some people would say you cannot cross if you're providing good medicine. But that's not for every patient. Every patient is unique. And I had to go through a few years there to really learn about this complex matter of chronic pain. And I will tell you that we in Minnesota are losing pain specialists that do this well. And if we don't end this DHS authority that they, in our bill currently, really want to expand it. They want to actually take it to a higher level and create more of an issue for these folks. And what surprises me is that after our 2 or 3 years of meeting with these folks on Zoom calls with DHS, Representative Bierman and I have been almost on every single call, and we are locked in step with this one. So, members, I'm really hoping that you allow this at the time was the right thing to do. Today it's different. Today, as a father of a son that passed away from this thing, I was angry, and I was concerned that our prescribing practices were not being done right. It is completely better today. It is not perfect. We have doctors that still need to keep their head on the right kind of prescribing, but I am really proud of the providers that are doing this. But I am also literally seeing providers that do this as a specialty care are saying, I can't do this anymore. And too many providers are walking away from their patients because of their fear of what DHS could do. DHS hasn't really thrown the hammer down. It's not like they're doing anything critical, but this language is going to make it harder. It's going to make it more intrusive to the providers that are doing good things. Our large systems out there, do great work. You know, the CentraCares, the Alinas, all those groups out there have got really good controls. We have to start trusting them again. And I think that this is a time where we don't need to give DHS one more thing to do, one more authority. For heaven's sakes, all these providers have boards of medical practice and other ways that people manage if they're not doing their jobs right. So, members, I really hope that we have a conversation about this. This is a super important discussion to have. And I hope that, Representative Knorr will accept this as a very friendly, very smart kind of a amendment that makes it better. Let's take it to conference. If there's more things to work on, let's talk about that. But I do know members on both sides of the aisle want to support this. And I'm concerned that pressure is being applied, and I want to make sure we do the right thing for the patients. This is about patients in long-term intractable pain. That's what we're talking about here. So I look forward to this conversation, Madam Chair and members and Representative Knorr. Again, I hope that you can support this today.
Thank you, Representative Baker. And, of course, we want to say also thank you, because I know that we really appreciate, many of us on both sides of this table, that the passion that you have for this issue. And I know you and I have had some conversations one-on-one in the past, so I really do appreciate that. I appreciate you centering good patient care as well as the passion on this particular issue. With that, members, do we have any discussion to the A5 amendment? Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Bonner, and thank you, Representative Baker, for bringing this forward. I know that you're doing some great work in this area. And want to see that continue. And I'd like to say, I'm concerned about deleting everything right now, because I'm afraid that we might lose some important things, because we do have some bad actors out there, and I'm afraid that we could lose some opportunities to deal with those bad actors. And what I would ask is that working together with the chair is find ways to make this language give me a little bit more comfort that we don't lose some things that we need to keep track of the bad actors and be able to do penalties on them, but at the same time making sure that we're addressing this so that when we're dealing with the intractable pain, that that's able to be out there, because I don't feel comfortable deleting everything out, and at the same time I don't feel completely comfortable with the language that the department's been using between this and in terms of the sanctions. And I think this is one of those that I'd like to encourage the chair and you to get together on these amendments here to bring something better back to us on the floor. So I'm going to say that I don't feel comfortable voting yes for your amendment right now, but I'd like to see where it continue, because I don't feel comfortable with the way the language is in there on these amendments right now.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative, or Chair Knorr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Becca, I hear you. I know how you feel about this and how passionate you are about addressing these issues. The OPIP was established in 2015 by state legislative process. Mm-hmm. to address exactly what we have been trying to do, to really go after the dependency of opioid and also address the misuse and everything that has been happening. This is a complex matter. I'm not going to say that I'm an expert in this process. The working group came up with some recommendation, the task force that was working, to give us some guidance. Quite frankly, the PMP and the CDC guidance exist as we speak, but many people are not following the same guidance. I know there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and I can assure you that I will be working with you to address this issue before we vote this bill to the floor. And so if you agree with me, we are going to make sure that we really address this issue and solve some of the challenges. I know there are two parts of it. There are folks who have worked on this issue for a long time. They're healthcare professionals. They're people who understand the science behind this. And I wanted to make sure that we hear them and sit down with them and really work on this. And I look forward to sitting down with you and making sure that we have got a good language.
Representative Baker.
No, and thank you, members. You know, I hear you, Representative Knorr, and I appreciate your words, but I need to make sure that we say this, but I don't trust DHS on this matter because I've listened to them for 2.5 years in meetings, and I think you all know me well enough. I don't want to call out an area that is not working. So there are people that are taking it the opposite direction that the tones of those meetings have been going. There is a reason I am passionate about this issue on this day for this thing. We've got folks watching us that are sitting there in pain hoping that this would not go the other direction like DHS wants it to go. So it's important to me to get it right. But this amendment that I'm trying to put forward makes sense to just say, we've got this now here. It's not perfect. There isn't a perfect provider out there, and we aren't going to fix it with any one bill or any one amendment. But the folks that are doing their jobs with the PMP programs, folks, a reminder, all prescribers now have to be checking the prescription monitoring program. They have to submit that with scheduled drugs. The use of PMP is up 30% still just last month. There is incredible support for the docs and the providers and anybody that is touching an opioid right now. This is important, but they all know their butts are on the line too. We have shaken the tree hard. Our providers want us to sort of step aside. They do not want DHS to tell them how to take care of their patients. And that's what DHS wants to do on this issue. So members and Mr. Chair, I really do hope you hear me loud and clear. I do not want to see this fail today, but I will go crazy if we don't honestly look at this, because it cannot go the direction that DHS wants this to go. I am proud of our hospitals and our clinics and our providers that are doing some good things here, but we cannot let it be where it's another layer of oversight for our providers trying desperately to get through a day with less burden, with less prior authorizations, with less. We need to provide that kind of support for them. We need to provide some sensible stuff and not let government keep getting layered and layered and layered like we had to do during the crisis. But when we can stop something, that means we are paying attention too. So If this isn't going to go, I'm disappointed, Representative Fisher, that you can't support it, because I know you know in your heart, you know this is the right thing to do, and I know the pressure you're under, but I will tell you, members, we need to do the right thing here. So, Madam Chair, I'll withdraw the amendment right now, but I will be very focused on making sure that this does get addressed, and I do trust my colleague, Chair Knorr, that we will work on this and find a way, but it is not working the way it's supposed to right now because they are taking it the wrong direction. So thank you for the indulgence, and I will withdraw the A5 amendment.
Thank you. Representative Baker withdraws the A5 amendment, and I will reiterate that I think we are all passionate about getting this right, and I want to thank the chair for his willingness to work on this issue. With that, members, we will move on to the A6. Is that you again, Representative Baker?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I will withdraw the A6 as well.
Okay. All right. We will the A6 has been withdrawn, members, and that leads us to the A7. Who is offering the A7?
Oh. I'm sorry. I got distracted there. I'm offering the A7, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Fisher, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry. Basically what this does is this is dealing with the sober homes, is that adding sober homes as under Section 254B.18. And what it does is it makes the opportunity that if there's any complaints about a sober home to be made, that they can be made to the and investigated by the Ombudsman for Mental Health and Development Disabilities. And that's because I know that in a lot of areas we have, there's an organization called MASH that does what they call certifying, licensing some sober homes, but not all sober homes are covered by that. And this is one of the ways we can get to that problem where we have sober homes that are not covered under MASH, is to make sure that we have an opportunity to, that when there are problems there, that we're able to have a way for something to be done.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Do we have any discussion to the A7 amendment? Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Fisher. I haven't had a chance to kind of study this one real well. I just maybe want to make a statement here. Again, my day's been kind of upside down and not able to really kind of study these things with my event out in our area. I just want to make a statement here that the sober homes are going through a transition. There are things that make me nervous when we again want to start licensing and have registries and have more things to do with this kind of transitional part of the recovery process. So there are some really good sober homes out there doing incredible work, and there are a few bad actors again. What I always get concerned about is overstepping it and overdoing what we're supposed to be doing. I just want to make a statement here that we have to be careful of this. Again, I think having a way to offer complaints is one thing. I get nervous that we're starting to encroach in an area that I'm not happy about. I don't want to see the sober home stuff expanded too much at this point, but again, we'll continue to work on this, and again, I just don't want to support anything right now that is making it harder for a sober home to be a good sober home. I think we've got plans in place. I think the working group still hasn't even come out with their assessments yet. They're still working on the final draft of that. But I do know that we have more work to do on this. So again, I'm concerned about moving anything to regulate sober homes at this point, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. And I think we share some of your concerns as well, and making sure we do it right. Do we have any other members on the list? All right. Seeing none, Representative Noor, would you like to comment?
Well, I will accept the amendment from Chair Fisher, and I think he wanted to move the A7 amendment.
Yes, that is correct. I moved the A7 amendment.
All right. Thank you, Chair Fisher. Any final closing comments you have, Representative Fisher? All right. With that, we will go to a vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
All right. It looks like the ayes have it. Thank you for that. And the A7 amendment is adopted to the DE1. All right. That moves us to the A8 amendment. We have Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the A8 amendment. And I would like to make an oral amendment to the A8.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, I would move to delete lines 1.5, 1.6, 1.8, and 1.9 I would also move to delete on line 1.7 the number 25 and the word and.
And I just want to be clear, I don't know that because this is an amendment to an amendment, I don't know that an oral amendment to an amendment is in order, as I think if you want to have the discussion, I don't know. But I don't know that it's actually something we can adopt.
You are correct, Madam Chair.
Do we want to go to Ms. Finelli? Did you want to weigh in or no? Okay. Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Mr. Herring. You are correct. I was not thinking amendment to amendment. Of course, when we're dealing with these omnibus DEs, I'm thinking in terms of bills and not an amendment, but you are correct. Then, you know, what I will do for today is I will introduce this and I will withdraw it because it actually does need just a little bit of work. My instructions in having this drafted were not clear. That was an error on my part. And so I will, but you can be sure you'll see this later. in a more correct form. This is regarding the sub-minimum wage provisions that we've heard a lot about in this committee, both from folks who are in favor of eliminating sub-minimum wage, the 14C employment, and folks who don't want to eliminate the 14C employment. And so I just want to point out that in this amendment, in the A8, I'm deleting the sections that eliminate sub-minimum wage employment. And I want to point out that the lines that I was trying to delete from my amendment are those things that I actually think should stay. I think they're good. It's language regarding case management, additional payments, data, a study, looking at employment outcomes. I think all of those things are actually really good, positive things. I also did not delete the appropriations associated with it, because I think that those are good, positive things. You know, in the discussions that I've had, and I did have this conversation with Chair Knorr as well, my concern as we move forward with eliminating the sub-minimum wage is that we are removing opportunities for some folks who might not have another opportunity. And while I do think that there is room to explore a better path to move people from sub-minimum wage employment to minimum wage employment, those folks who are capable and would like to do that, I think that we should try to figure out better pathways to get people there. I am 100% on board with that, and I think that should absolutely be the goal of this committee, which is why, like I said, I was trying to remove this other language that I had not necessarily intended to be in my amendment. But, you know, we heard pretty powerful testimony. For one, we heard powerful testimony from members of the disability community who themselves have been blessed with minimum wage jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, we heard about the young man who works at Pizza Hut and clearly loves that job and gets a lot of satisfaction from that. And we heard from other folks who have been able to have that success and have really appreciated that. But we also heard from folks, mostly on behalf of their loved ones. And it's because their loved ones didn't have the same capability to come and testify for themselves. And those are the folks I'm concerned we're leaving behind when we eliminate the sub-minimum wage. Those are the folks who probably didn't have the skills to be able to come and testify. But the value that they get from their work is just the same as the other folks we were able to hear from. So while I really do believe this is a significant issue, I think when we eliminate sub-minimum wage, we are not adding more choices for folks to be able to attain a higher wage employment. We're simply removing choices from folks who really are probably not going to have that opportunity. And I think that we should really exercise caution when we do that. And with that, I will withdraw the amendment.
Thank you. We do also have Representative Zalesnikar on the list.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. My comment is just to follow up on what Representative New Brindley states, is I think that there's many good intentions that have unintended consequences, and the types of people that came to see me from all of greater Minnesota and even, quite frankly, down here in the metro said it's unfortunate that disability, the group of disability, is being put in one bucket, and it's an all or none. Uh-huh. And every time things are an all or none, it raises a flag in my mind. Because while the intentions are pure with this bill, and I understand the concept of it, I also have had people in my office crying that their adult child doesn't fit in the bucket that this is intended for. And so they're going to lose something that has been their lifeline. And so that is the unintended consequences of this. And so my hope would be that this disability pathway could include both instead of the elimination of one thing to go to another thing. And that's what my angst is with this bill, is that it is hurting a group of people, and whether it's one or 10 or 20 or 100, it is somebody's child, and I know a few like that, that they fall in this bucket. And so it's going to do wonderful things for many people, and they're at minimum wage, and they have great potential, and and we need them in the workforce. So I support the pieces in the bill, but I also think there is an opportunity where it doesn't need to be an all or none, and I think that is the piece that government often goes to an all or none mentality. And that isn't always the best thing to serve people, because they don't fit in an all or one bucket. And it reminds me of caring for seniors, and they're very similar. And so the more options we have for choice for them to find the right shoe that fits, their family and their caseworkers are going to know what that looks like. And so I would just urge us caution as we look to that. And I think there's just more work to be done, or people will lose. And that's the piece of this. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. Is there any other members that wish to comment? All right. And Representative Ann New Brindley, would you like to withdraw your amendment?
I think I did.
Okay, just to be sure. All right, with that, we will withdraw the A8 amendment, or Representative New Brindley withdraws the A8 amendment. With that, we are moving on to the A9 amendment. And Representative Baker.
Thank you, members. The A9 amendment is simply the fund is set to expire currently in the year 2031. The bill calls for us to get rid of the sunset clause that was agreed to during our negotiating back in 2019 with then the authors of the bill, myself and Representative Liz Olson, that had agreed to this, you know, agreement that we have to raise $250 million in the state of Minnesota through licensing fees, which is what the bill initially established. We changed our licensing fees in the state of Minnesota, first in the country to really do something like this. But we did it, and to get the supermajority of both bodies at that point, both Republicans and Democrats controlled each side of the Capitol, if you will. To do that, we needed to say how much is enough and when can we do some good. And that amount was $250 million, and that was at that time said we were not going to sunset until the state of Minnesota reached that through licensing fees. Through that conversation, we also knew that it was likely that we were going to see some lawsuit dollars coming to Minnesota. So what we see now, 3 or 4 years later, members, is we have over $500 million coming to Minnesota in the next 15 to 16 years through settlements. There's been at least one settlement that has been signed and dotted and everything else. The second one is running through our system this year with the Attorney General's office for another $220 million. So that is where we get the $500 plus million dollars. So members, And when we agreed to move up the date to a hard date of 2031, is we revisited that clause. When does it look like we're going to get to it? And with the one lawsuit settled, that was going to bring us to around 2031. So members, this is about keeping our word. This is about telling the folks that right now that are paying a very high fee to sell opioids in Minnesota, the drug companies that are selling us medicine that is needed, the high volume members, the pharmaceutical folks that are selling it, are currently paying $250,000 a year at the high level. They're paying it, and they're handling it, but we told them it was going to end in 2031. We obviously will be well beyond the $250 million. Members, I hope that you accept this as a friendly amendment, Mr. Chair, and I do hope that it's a way for us to keep our word. So with that, I'll stop and I'll hear the comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other members that would like to comment on the A9? Right. Seeing none, we'll move to Chair Noor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I do remember, recall, we were sitting in this same room discussing House File 400. I know some of us, when we looked at the settlement at $250 million, that we put that as the ceiling, and also we put a sunset. Some of us were not really, really happy with putting a sunset on an issue that I know you are passionate about, as I noted earlier on. This issue of opioid crisis will never end. We have to be able to continue to address it until we solve it. It's going to take us a long time to solve this issue. With that, I think you can see ending the sunset will allow us to be able to hold those big pharmaceutical accountable and to be able to continue to contribute to the account so we can address this epidemic in our state. So I will urge you to vote no on this amendment, and hopefully during the conversations ongoing, we need to figure out how do we sustain the resources that are needed to address this harmful epidemic in our communities.
Thank you, Representative Noor. Representative Baker, would you like any final comments?
Sure. I'm disappointed. I'm going to ask for roll call, Madam Chair. Okay. This is important because this is about sticking to our word, and I think this is where we need to kind of put the rubber to the road. So, members, right now the licensing fees are collecting roughly $15 million a year. It goes into a fund where immediately half of it goes to the counties, and it's specifically going to Child Protection Services, because a lot of parents get sick with this, and that's where we found the real need to get this there. I think about $3 million of it goes directly to the Native American community. There's some that goes to our administrative fees. And we had a place where we sunsetted it. It doesn't go back to the old fees either. You know, when we changed the bill, it was $265 is what a pharmaceutical company paid to do licensing in Minnesota, and they could sell all the drugs they wanted to. And we raise it to now the minimum is going to be $5,000 a year. So it's still a significant increase. We obviously are a outlier in the rest of the country. I think it's important that we also recognize the lawsuit settlement dollars that are coming now to Minnesota that I had mentioned is $500+ million. The counties are now receiving 75% of that dollar. So the counties are getting way more money through the settlements. 15 years from now or so, we can certainly relook at how we might want to continue something going if it's still an ongoing problem. I'm an optimist. I think that we can almost try to get our arms around it, but the opioid crisis isn't the same as the fentanyl crisis, and I want to make sure we understand that. This was a fee against the pharmaceutical companies who got us there. They are paying lawsuits, heavy lawsuits. We made a deal with our members here and the governor. I think we need to stand by that. So members, let's deal with it then in 10 plus years, but we should stick with this. I look forward to the vote because I want to make sure, I want to know who's going to want to stand up for what is the right thing to do, because We said we could do it. The money is much more than we ever dreamt of, and there's still more lawsuits coming. So that's all I have to say, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We appreciate your passion on this, Representative Baker. With that, a roll call being requested, we will ask Mr. Gonzalez-Navarro to take the roll.
Chair Knorr?
No.
Knorr, no. Vice Chair Bonner?
No.
Bonner, no. Lee Newbrindley?
Yes.
Newbrindley, yes. Representative Baker?
Aye.
Baker, aye. Representative Clardy?
No.
Clardy, no. Representative Fisher?
No.
Fisher, no. Representative Franson?
Yes.
Franson, yes. Representative Gilman?
Yes.
Gilman, yes. Representative Hicks?
No.
Hicks, no. Representative Keeler?
No.
Keeler, no. Representative Cotizo-Watoon?
No.
Representative Cotizo-Watoon, no. Representative Pryor?
No.
Pryor, no. Representative Ryer?
No.
Ryer, no. Representative Zalesnikar?
Aye.
Zalesnikar, aye.
There being five ayes and nine noes, the amendment is not adopted. And with that, we will move on to the next. We have an A-10 amendment. Representative Baker.
Madam Chair, the A-10 amendment asks the committee to leave the ORAC Council as it was carefully set up back in 2018 and 2019. We took painful processes to make sure the people that sat on the council were well thought through. And again, we've got addiction medicine doctor on there. We've got people that are a person in recovery. We've got 19 seats. We've got four legislators, one from each party, one from each body. It was a really well thought through. And because back then we recognized that most places only have one person representing an association, for example, the Minnesota Hospital Association, an addiction provider, a person in long-term recovery, someone in chronic pain. We recognize then our Native American community is under attack, and we doubled the seats for them, and we have two amazing members on the council right now. Again, they're doing great work. We meet a lot almost every month, and this has been a hard-working group of council members. About 2 years ago, the council had this come in front of us again. We talked about it. We voted as a council that we did not want to change the makeup of the council. And I'm asking members to honor that request then. If we want to make a change, I would ask the governor's office to come and visit with us sometime so that we better understand where are we missing this. But just to put all of a sudden nine more seats on from a community that is getting decimated, we could do that with 100 more people around the state. It was thoughtful. It is what it is. I'm asking the members here to please respect the work of ORAC and what we're doing, and to take the A-10 amendment, and I hope that the chair finds this as a friendly.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Do we have any additional members that would like to speak before we go to the chair? No questions, seeing none. Chair Knorr, would you like to comment,
please? Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Baker, you know, you've been part of this process from the beginning. And I think the conversation that we've had, even the visit we made to the reservation to sit down and talk to folks that we had previously, is to understand the challenge. We know that Native Americans are most impacted by the opioid. Likewise, I think this is more about government-to-government relationship. We cannot be picking two members of the tribes and say they're full. So in order to rectify that, we're including the entire 11 members of the tribe so that they can be whole. Right now, we only have two members. So it becomes difficult for it to become government-to-government relations within that board. So the intent is to make sure we include the entire tribal government in that conversation.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Baker.
Appreciate that comment. Again, for efficiencies of how councils work and committees work, when they get too large, it gets become very, very challenging to manage that. We don't have every hospital on the council, but we have the Minnesota Hospital Association represented. They report back to the association, and they report to all hospitals. Similar to what the Native American seats that are appointed at this point, that was brought forward by the Native American communities as a whole. They could have applied to it. They were assigned to it. The commissioner made the decision of which seats are on there. There are term limits on these. So the two members that represent the Native American community now report back to their councils, their statewide network, if you will. And so that is how these work the best, so that the person representing the tribes is not just, for example, representing the Lower Sioux. They're not just representing the Chippewa tribe or the band up in Mille Lacs. They are very much reporting back to the entire communities and nations in the state. So again, my plea to this is, if you change the makeup this dramatically without the thoughtful process of what we did to get here, this could be a much different look, and you're going to have a much different outcome. And I'm concerned that again, the good work of our members back here is going to be lost. So I urge a yes vote on this A10. I'm not going to call for a roll call, madam, but I do hope members think about this.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Do we have any other members that would like to speak to the A10 first? I will take a point of personal privilege for a brief moment to say that I know that one of the lessons that I learned, and I know that some of our members here have made that abundantly clear, is that each of our tribal nations have various viewpoints, and they act and think independently as well as one. And so I do appreciate certainly the comments, but I also know that we want to be respectful of our tribal relatives and give them their respect that they deserve. And with that, we will move members to the A10. All those in favor of the A10, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
All right, and the noes have it. The A10 is not adopted, and we will move on to the A11. All right, the A11. And Representative Hicks, would you like to speak to the A11 and move it before the committee?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to move the A11 amendment. This amendment is technical in nature, really working to remove the need for providers to obtain a separate license when supporting people through assistive technology during overnight hours. We all know that there's a significant workforce shortage. AOST is a way to address that workforce shortage. The additional language does three things. It requires the provider to provide notification to the department when they're using AOST. It requires the provider to conduct response drills at the home if no emergency response has been required in 3 months. And so what that basically means is that if the individuals who live in the home have not practiced what they should do in an emergency, they need to do so. And it also has some technical language changes to better clarify the definition of technology. So the amendment is primarily technical in nature and just make sure that we are meeting the needs of our providers and addressing the workforce shortage in a smart way.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. Do we have anyone else who wishes to speak to the A11 amendment? All right, seeing none. Chair Noor, would you like to speak to the A11?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I think I've reviewed this. This is more of a technical in nature. I will say vote yes for the amendment.
All right. The A11 being before us, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed?
All right, the ayes have it. The A11 amendment is adopted. And that leaves us with the A13 amendment. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Wanted to just bring along A13. Really what it does is we've got some providers that are being hurt out there right now because, and again, I don't have all my talking notes with me, but what I think it does is you're supposed to have an assessment done by a person going into the substance use treatment, and you have one day to do this, 24 hours. And there have been providers that can't do it for like 2 or 3 days, sometimes 3 or 4 days. And what we're trying to do is make sure that the providers are reimbursed from day one, because you cannot assess somebody if they're in withdrawal. You cannot really give them a good assessment when they are so sick they really can't even sit up, but they want to be there. And so what this does, I believe this is also a technical amendment, cleans up some language, but we want to make sure the payment for the substance use disorder under this section starts from the day of initiation. So it helps us with these few days that are missing, and some providers have really needed this, and again, it's part of getting it tightened down. So with that, members, I hope that you can support this as recognizing they're servicing clients when they walk in the door, but they sometimes can't get the assessment done for a day or two or three. I hope that you can support this as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And just as a technical clarification, Representative Baker, you wanted to move the A13 amendment, correct?
Madam Chair, thank you. I do want to move the A13 amendment. Thank
just
you.
Making sure we cross the T's
yep.
and dot the I's.
Thank you.
All right. With that, are there any members that would like to speak to the A13 amendment? All right. Seeing none. Chair Noor, would you like to comment on the A13?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Beck, I think this changes the existing framework in the law. It's not something new that we're taking out and making that change. I understand this may be technical, but it's more than just being technical. It changes that whole framework. And sometimes I think having the experts in the room will help us address the implication of this. So, Madam Chair, I just wanted to see if someone from DHS can really explain the impact of this amendment that is before us.
Madam Chair, as I come down to, I just got a minute, but yeah, I was using technical terms like, you know, people were using around here. I was just going to throw that in there. So it's a little bit more than a technical, but thank you for that clarification.
Mr. Good try, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Good catch. There we go. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Representative Baker. And we do have... And I will go ahead and let you identify yourself for the committee and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members, Christy Graham with the Department of Human Services. So this is an amendment that I believe removes a provision that was passed in 2021 that would create a requirement that substance use disorder outpatient providers, there's a prior authorization in place. And so this would remove that prior authorization is my understanding.
That's correct.
Am I in the right one? Okay. Yes. And so that had a small savings in 2021, so there would be potentially a cost to that change. This is something that we're open to. We have a new system called utilization management that would sort of cover the purpose of this prior authorization. So we're open to this, but there could be a potential cost.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Graham. Representative Baker.
Madam Chair, thank you again. Sometimes it is. It's. I would have assumed that again, when you take patients into a treatment center, they are should be and clearly should be getting reimbursed from day one. I do understand there might be a cost to this. Maybe I'm asking if we can allow this. Maybe, Mr. Chair, I could withdraw the amendment. But if we can work on this as it goes forward, this is an important thing. I think DHS wants this. I don't think this is a big problem, but I do know if it's a cost, we need to build it in. But there are, we have to recognize the fact that we're getting more people into treatment that can't be assessed on the first day that they're there. So with that, again, Mr. Chair, if it isn't acceptable because there's a cost to this, I will withdraw it if that's the reason for that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Baker withdraws the A11.
A13.
Or, excuse me, the A13 amendment. My apologies. Chair Noor?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Baker, you know, I think we can even more simplify in that process where we can add the section without striking the lines, I believe. So, so I think in terms of the amendment, it deletes lines 31 to 33 on page 101, but also brings in the new language on line 1.5 to 1.7 on the A13 amendment. So the goal is to add the new language with the existing framework. And so wanted to check in with the nonpartisan staff.
Patience, thank you all. As we weigh in with Ms. Sunderman here.
So could Sean Herring, committee administrator, hi. Could we?
Hi.
Speaking a lot more than I normally do. Can we ask just for clarification from the department if we took lines 1.5, I believe that is the intent, 1.4, 1.5, 1.6, 1.7. If we divided the amendment, would that have a cost? Do we believe that there would be a fiscal cost for this?
Madam Chair,
Ms. Grum,
committee members, Mr. Herring, we do not believe this would have a cost. This is current law does allow for billing for, I think, within 3 days of a comprehensive assessment right now. The department has language right now that would allow, would extend that to 5 days. And so this wouldn't have a cost. This would just clarify that that payment needs to be made. And it's my understanding that there have been some issues with payment, particularly with managed care organizations. So we are looking into that as a department. But we do agree with the policy direction here and that this would be an important modification to make sure that people can get access to treatment and their individualized treatment plans as soon as possible.
Madam Chair, as a friend.
Representative, or Chair Noor.
Madam Chair, the friendly amendment is to delete line 1.3 and 1.4 and adopt line 1.5, 1.6, and 1.7 in the amendment. Correct.
Chair Noor, would you like to move to divide the amendment?
That's exactly what I will, I'm requesting, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Chair Noor. All right. And do we want to have staff just clarify what the division will be?
Madam Chair, members, I believe we would vote on the first part of the amendment, so that would be line 1.3, and then we would vote on the second instruction of the amendment for lines 1.4 to 1.7, and that is how the amendment would be divided.
Okay. So we're going to vote first on lines 1.1 through 1.3. Okay, so we will vote first on the first part of the amendment, which is lines 1.1 through 1.3. Is there any discussion to the first part of the amendment? Mr. Chair.
Please vote no on the first part of the amendment.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I would also recommend a no vote on the first division, on the division of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. With that, seeing no other comments, we will first take up portion one,
lines 1.1 through 1.3 of the AC13 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
No.
You want to go against your own device? Thank you, Representative Chair. Let's start again. All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed?
No.
Very good. Thank you. The first part of the amendment, lines 1.1 through 1.3, are not adopted.
Madam Chair, before we go into the next half of this, I want to make sure I think I might have said I was going to withdraw the A13. So if I did that, I want to make sure we're back at the table so we don't kind of miss that important part two. So
okay.
Sorry if I'm getting it out of line there, but I was going to say it before. But okay. I want to make sure we're still able to talk about the A13.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair.
Representative Baker.
I'd like to introduce the A13 amendment and maybe call for division on that as well. And so I'll stop there, but I would like to make sure the A13 is introduced.
All right. Representative Baker has moved the A13 before the committee and recommended to divide the amendment into two sections. The first being 1.1 through 1.3, and the second, lines 1.4 through 1.7, for the record. Just to make sure we have done it accurately, we will once again vote on the first part of the amendment, lines 1.1 through 1.3. Chair Noor, do you have advice for us?
Please vote no on this one.
Thank you, Chair Noor. All right. And with that, any members have any discussion? Seeing none, we will vote on the first part of the amendment, lines 1.1 through 1.3. All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed?
No.
All right. The noes have it. And the sections 1.1 through 1.3 are not adopted. Then we will take the second part of the division, lines 1.4 through 1.7. Representative Baker, would you like to speak to
yes.
the second half?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for your help on this, getting it clarified. I would like your support on adopting the second half of the A13 amendment, please, with your aye vote, and I would appreciate a vote on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Noor.
Please vote yes.
All right. Any members have any discussion to the second division, lines 1.4 through 1.7? Seeing none, we will go to a vote on the second portion of the division, lines 1.4 through 1.7. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? All right, the ayes have it. Section or the portion lines 1.4 through 1.7 of the A13 have been adopted. All right. Seeing no other amendments, we will go to discussion on the bill. Chair Noor, would you like to go first?
We have a DE1 as amended.
My apologies. We need to move DE first. Okay. Sorry, members, we're a little on the fly here today. We do still need to adopt the DE amendment as amended. Mr. Chair, would you like to speak to the DE amendment as amended?
I move that we accept the amendments to the DE amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Adopt it to 2847. To the underlying bill.
As amended to the underlying, yes.
Correct.
So we have the DE1 as amended to the underlying bill before us. Is there any discussion to the DE1 as amended? Seeing none, we will go to a vote. All those in favor of the DE1 as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No.
All right, I believe the ayes have it, and therefore the DE1.
Madam Chair, just to put, to clarify, so we are adopting to the underlying bill, which is 2847, with the DE as amended. So we are adopting, because we have already the DE1 as amended, to the underlying bill.
All right. We are, yes. We are moving the underlying bill with the DE1 as amended. HF 2847, as amended, is before us. Chair Noor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I know it has been a long day so far. It's almost 5 p.m., but we've got a lot of things. First of all, I just wanted to begin with and say, yesterday I spent some time in an assisted living right in my district with individuals who basically told me a lot about how this bill will impact many people's lives. And some of the things that we're doing here is about changing the lives for those who take care of the elderly and disabled folks. That grounds us why we are here in this place. Madam Chair and members, this is a historic investment. Unlike any other time that we have seen in this chamber, we are significantly investing in PCA or CFSS to a tune of $900 million. We are also investing to increase the pay for the PCA through the SEIU contract, whereby we will see up to $22.50 by 2025. We're also increasing the investment in DWRS by $265 million to raise the rate to $18. We're also investing almost $900 million in the elderly waiver rate increase. Currently, they're receiving up to $14.58 to $17 almost. We're also increasing the rates for other HCBS in this bill. We also understand the challenges the workforce through the pandemic and up to now that they're facing in the healthcare industry. We have grants for the workforce. We have programs that are designed to increase the workforce in the industry. Madam Chair and members, this is a good day to say that we are starting to tackle the challenges faced by long-term care. We're also increasing funds in various areas that we have neglected. Madam Chair and members, this bill also addresses the substance use disorder significantly. We're putting out there programs to reduce the harm of substance use disorder. Likewise, this bill separates DCT, which we have talked about for many years, and this is the time that the Direct Care and Treatment Agency is separated from the Department of Human Services. Our bill reflects a comprehensive approach from what we've had. And Madam Chair and members, this bill, particularly to my colleagues with Lead New Brindley and the GOP, this bill is better because of you, because we listen to you. we listen to the people who came before us. We could not have done this without you all. This is about all of us and the future that we would like to see in the state of Minnesota. With that, I will take any questions from any members about the bill.
Thank you. Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Representative Noor. And it's been a privilege to work with you on this committee. And I just, you know, to your point of the things that it's a good day for, I have nothing to say except you're correct. What it's a bad day for is nursing homes. And so I wanted to ask you which lines in this budget you believe are funding nursing homes. And if you could walk me through, and the other committee members who have asked me, where you see nursing home funding being changed. That's my first question, please.
Chair Noor.
Madam Chair, Representative Zalesnikar, as you're aware of, the nursing homes use VBR, value-based reimbursement. And if you look at the forecasted program, there's $853 million. In that assessment, knowing that if you look at the data right now, the projection for the CNA in a nursing home by 2025 is $23 and I believe some few cents. Compared to what I just discussed about folks who are in elderly waiver rates, which is $14. In comparison, yes, you will not see on this spreadsheet other than a small funding for the critical nursing facilities, which is a small amount of investment in this bill. But what I have been assured and what we have been told and what we have seen in the projected focus for the VBR, that investment is there. And likewise, I think by the investment that we're making here today, that will also help lift up some of the challenges the nursing homes have been facing. And this is why we don't have a line item because of that rate increase, which is already baked into the system.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Noor. Today I talked to some nursing homes, and they still are operating off of 2020 audits. It's 2023. So this formula that Minnesota operates under, this projection of this 853, you know, $853 million, I think was your words, of dollars, is retroactive. The expenses there are credit lines and there are facilities, 300 of them, that many of them are not going to make their debt payments right now. So I don't believe nursing home funding is put in with inflation markers. It's just cost incurred. So when I look at the budget lines that I've seen this entire year for every government entity, it's got inflationary adjustments and language in here. And so what the nursing homes are going to get reimbursed are for actual costs already incurred from the year 2020. That's what they're going to get. So this formula is not going to accomplish what I believe people believe in their minds and hearts it is. So I say this as somebody who's actually seen financials from nursing homes. And while people might think they're living high on the hog, they're not. There isn't a nonprofit or a for-profit that I know, that I'm aware of, that is. And so they're all trying to do gimmicky things through social media and everything because it's desperation. Whatever they can get to get people to apply. I've seen people 10 years ago have a car in the parking lot so that if you came and worked, that's a sign of desperation. Desperation is what this is. And we are past gimmicks. Every gimmick possible is done. And so my cry out to people is not about me. It's about the people that are going to assisted living's discharged to the hospitals when they can't meet their needs. The licensing requirements of 144G are very clear. When you can't meet the needs of people, and if you admit them, you better be able to, or you're going to have the Office of Facility Health Complaints in the state of Minnesota come in and give you fines, which in assisted living, we paid $3 million in fines in COVID. So on top of being penalized, they had no staff. Nursing homes paid $1 million in COVID, which drained their funds. And this is not, this VBR is cost-based, actual cost from 2 years ago. In 2 years ago, I didn't pay what I pay for eggs. So they are not able to have the menu match for seniors. They're not able to have anything match because all of our lives have been adjusted, except the nursing home formula doesn't capture that. And we can't fix this in this session, but this budget is completely missing the mark because the people are still going to be sick. We're not going to change how Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and insulin-dependent diabetics work. And so they're going to be unstable. They're going to get shipped in the ambulance, which is the most expensive route to go in transportation. The governor's budget had non-emergency transportation in the budget. There's nothing in here for non-emergency transportation or nursing homes. And so ultimately, these people are living. We have the technology to keep people alive, and we have a situation now where when they need the care, the only option that's going to be left with 24-hour nurses is the hospital. And I've talked to the ER doctors just last week. They're calling me. I don't even know who some of these people are, saying we can't keep having this revolving door. We send them back to the assisted living, and they send them back in the ambulance because the facility can't have that liability on them. If they're not stable, the only option the assisted living has is to send them in the ambulance for an assessment. Otherwise, they're going to get another fine. So this whole charade is going to continue statewide in Minnesota. So while I commend you for what you've done for elderly waiver, I understand the assisted living model. I've spent the last 20 years there. And I've also understand the nursing home. But what really worries me is what this is going to do. It's going to put Minnesota upside down on the heaviest level of care because many of our assisted livings are not set up to do it. For the buildings, and we don't have 24-hour nurses in assisted living. So those heavy care chronic people who are aging at record paces right now, with a worker shortage, the only place to have them is the hospital's going to be they're going to have it because they can't deny anybody. So that's going to be the model we're in, is in the hallways at the hospital. So I say it with all due respect, but this is what is being lived right now. And if we have a $20 billion surplus, to me it's a shame that you as a chair weren't given more money than this because the issue is not a surprise to anybody. It's pathetic. I mean, people are mad in Minnesota that we're giving zoos more money than we're giving seniors in nursing homes. And that's not me. It's people calling me. Really sad that this is where we're at in Minnesota. And we have, I just looked today, I think there's 500,000 people that are going to enter the 85 bracket real soon. Because they're not all going to be home. 15% of those people are going to need the nursing home, but it's not going to exist. Because these rates from VBR are going to show up in about 2025 is 2 years too long. They're not going to be here. And even in 2025, those rates are past costs. They have nothing to do with current costs. So I just urge that whatever possibilities there are with the governor and other committees that we look where we have billions and get this done before the whole system implodes because the hospitals are looking to us to do it, as our seniors and families. Otherwise, we're going back to how it was with my grandma. She had her mom for a month. Her brother had her mom for a month. Everybody took grandma for a month. But guess what grandma's condition was back when they did it, and they lived to 70 or 75. She could walk, and it was setting up meds, giving them meals, a place to sleep. I don't think everybody in this room wants to bathe there, is ready to bathe them, do 24-hour care, change their incontinent briefs, because that's the reality, and everything else that happens with aging to the last day for 105-year-olds, because I've cared for many of them. and it's not odd to live to 100 anymore. So that's my worry, and we can't miss the mark this session. We can't, because it's going to affect everybody. So this budget is underfunded to accomplish what the needs are for these seniors, and that's, we have to find a solution, and I sure hope we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Knorr, do you have any comment before we move to the next member? All right. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the work all of us did this year. This is a lot of work, and there's a lot of really important things in the bill that I do support, Chair Knorr. Thank you for that and the members that worked hard on this. I want to call out the splitting of DC&T. That's a good idea. And I support that right now because we've got great leadership on that side of DHS right now. They need to run it differently, and I think it should be split off. And I think this is the time to do it. And I've examined that. I've talked to leadership there. I like that idea, and I think it's going to be a good move. Obviously, today I'm disappointed because of the changes we made in a council that, yeah, I've been immersed in. I appreciate members sharing my passion for this issue. I don't need to hear that anymore, because you can't write legislation on emotion. But I know what it's like, though, to be on a council that's well-balanced, well-thought-through, and, sunset clauses matter. Because I didn't, it appeared that I wouldn't want to take more members of this beautiful community of our indigenous community is kind of what I was trying to do or not do. It's not it at all. It's, they're getting... nationally, they're getting over $1 billion in their own national lawsuit settlements. And that will come to those Native communities here in Minnesota. And we have some of the largest indigenous communities in the nation. So we're going to get a lot more money. And they set up their own councils. And so my point is we just have to have balance around here. And we have to have members that stand up and do what they say they're going to do. When you tell me one thing and you vote another way, it's a challenge. It's hard to understand how the process needs to work, and it's a challenge because, again, Representative Bierman and I have worked hard on the OPIP thing. I am going to really, help Chair Knorr walk that one through. There has to be a change there because patients are being hurt right now. So I will continue to work on this issue and support the work that we need to do. Again, I completely agree with my colleague that says our nursing homes are woefully underfunded. There needs to be some changes, and there is plenty of money that is allocated currently in areas that it should not go to. So we need to continue to work that. We will continue to bang that drum because it's important to make sure our residents of Minnesota know the priorities are not where they should be. So I want to say thank you to everybody on the council, on this committee. I am honored to serve on this. Healthcare is complicated, and it is personal to every one of us. And again, I just appreciate that, but we have a long ways to go. I wish this bill was different. I wish I could support it, but I do know that we are going to continue to work together as members. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Baker. And Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to say thank you to Chair Knorr for the great work that he's done in putting this bill together. And I think one of the things I really appreciate is the way that he's approaching the issue around the workforce shortages that we have. Is it's a twofold problem. It's not just about making sure that we're getting people to a point where they can have a living wage and that the facilities can support that, but it's also trying to find a pathway to bring more people into the state, because that's what our big problem is remember, we have got over 100,000 more jobs in the state than we've got people to fill them. And so to really start tackling the workforce shortage around here, we've got to look at what can we do to help bring people in. And this bill does that. It does some unique things in here, not only having a grant for the long-term workforce program that's in here that's funded at over $25 million to help make sure that we can get people in here. It also has grants that are available to help people with their document status to be legal to be able to work here in our state. This is the pipeline we need to start bringing in here to help expand our workforce and help make sure that we've got the people there as the pay comes in to make sure we're filling these positions. And I think this is what we have to take a look at. We've got a twofold prong approach here, and I think I really appreciate that the chair's gone into that. taking the governor's suggestion, taking the suggestion of a number of advocates that have come together to help figure out how do we fill these needs out there and take care of those that are coming to us. So I want to say thank you for the work on it with the limited dollars that you had.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Are there any other members wishing to speak on House File 2847 as amended? Representative New Brindley, do you have any final comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do. First, I just want to start out by saying thank you, Chair Knorr. Thank you for running a really respectful committee. Thank you for being accessible to all of us. I very, very much appreciate that. I appreciate how you have run this committee, and I really appreciate your staff. They have been incredibly good to work with. So thank you so much, Mr. Herring and Mr. Gonzalez Navarro. I really, really appreciate, again, your accessibility, your willingness to have conversations and work with us. And I think that, as you mentioned, Chair Knorr, I think that's reflected in this bill, and I appreciate that. I often talk about how some committees here in the House are sort of we work our brains on those committees, and they're very business-like. We're looking at numbers, we're looking at data, we're looking at spreadsheets. And while we do those things in this committee, I think of this as a heart committee, that this is the kind of committee we come to and deal with issues that prick our hearts. And certainly that has happened here. And I think it's a real privilege to sit on this committee, because it's unique. This Human Services Committee is unique among all of our committees in that this committee helps people in real, very tangible ways. So thank you to all of our colleagues here who are willing to do this work. And, you know, the rest of, I think, our colleagues in the House think we're all crazy for asking to be here. But we're crazy together, and I appreciate that. So I just want to say that it's such a privilege to sit on this committee, and where we really help people in very tangible ways. I appreciate that the bulk of the spending in this bill is being used for these rate increases. It's going directly to care for people. That's the bulk of the funding in this bill. And I want to acknowledge that and thank you for that. I think that is appropriate. There is good policy, you know, I mean, little things, this overnight remote supervision, that's going to help with the demands on our workforce. This PCA driving privileges, caregiver respite grants, I think are a big deal. Our caregivers in this state want to take care of their loved ones. They want to keep them at home, and these respite grants will help them to be able to do so. Again, you know, funding for substance use disorder. There's good stuff in this bill. I also want to acknowledge, though, that we've got some real concerns as well. We've talked about the subminimum wage issue that I do think there is room to work on. While I agree with my colleague, Representative Baker, that it is wise to split the direct care and treatment portion of DHS, I'm concerned that we're not finding efficiencies in that. I'm concerned that we are breaking off a huge portion and we are growing bureaucracy instead of figuring out how to do things better as we split those. I'm concerned, frankly, that there's almost $400 million worth of grants in this bill with no additional oversight to DHS. You know, our legislative auditor over and over and over again has cited problems with grant administration and the pervasive problems with a lack of oversight in how those are being administered. And we've got another $400 million going out without any additional oversight, without making sure that money is going to that we're going to have good stewardship over those funds. Most importantly,
I am going to be voting no on this bill today, not necessarily because of what's in it, but because of what is glaringly omitted from this bill. And I guess I do have one just quick question, Chair Knorr, and I suspect you will have the answer to this. But the $853 million of forecasted spending for our nursing homes, do you know if that is entirely state dollars or if those are state, if it's a combination of state and federal dollars?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Lee Newbern, I think as you're aware of most of the programs in Medicaid, there's always state and federal funding, but I believe this is the state portion, but I can phone a friend, the experts in the department here, so to see Director Bailey coming down, so you can get the accurate answer.
Ms. Bailey, if you'd like to go ahead and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, Elise Bailey, Budget Director for the Department of Human Services, and that to answer your question, Representative New Brindley, that would include both federal and state dollars.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Bailey. I appreciate that. I think that matters because when we look at this budget, when we talk about the budget, when we talk about the budget forecast, we are typically talking about general fund forecast. We are typically talking, certainly in here, when we were talking about targets, we're talking about the impact on the general fund. And so I appreciate that distinction and understanding that. So back to this nursing home funding, the glaring omission in this bill. And first of all, again, Chair Knorr, I spoke to you privately and I told you that this is what I was gonna say. I don't fault you for how you spent the money in this bill. I fault your leadership for putting you in this position. With $18 billion, we've been told that there are limited resources. My goodness, if we don't have the resources right now to take care of our seniors, we never will. We never will. We have lost, since 2018, we have lost 26 nursing homes across the state of Minnesota. We've lost 2,597 beds. That's 50 average-sized nursing homes. We, in a single month, just in November, in a single month, 11,000 people, 11,000 people across the state were turned away from nursing homes because there is no room in the inn. There's no place to put them. And we keep hearing about these historic investments, and the investments in this bill are important, and they will help our senior citizens in different ways, but they're not helping our nursing homes. And I go back to what I said about the caregiver respite grants. That's important because those caregiver grants help people to keep their loved ones at home, because that's what people want to do. People want their loved ones at home. And so when these 11,000 people are being turned away, those are desperate people. That's not a choice of convenience for people. That is a choice of necessity to put our loved ones in these nursing homes, in these long-term care facilities. That is a choice of necessity, not convenience. So when we don't have the resources to care for them, we are absolutely neglecting our most vulnerable population. I want to go back to this historic investment that we keep hearing about and this $853 million, because that number has been thrown around a lot. But there are a couple of really important points regarding that $853 million. Number one, this is a forecasted number. It's not a real number. It is a forecasted number. And that forecasted number is based on previous average census. But of course, we're losing beds constantly because of workforce in our nursing homes. We've got census as low as 60% in some of these nursing homes. So folks are not actually going to get that $853 million that's been forecasted. It never works out that way, actually. The forecasted number always comes in lower when it comes to what nursing homes are actually getting. The other thing I would say about this money that is going to nursing homes, frankly, this is catch-up money. This is money catching up based on 2 years ago. It is not going to, it doesn't pay for current needs. It doesn't pay current costs that our nursing home facilities are incurring. So we talk about this dollar as though this is the investment we as a legislature are making. No, nursing homes know this money is coming, and they're still closing their doors. They can't make it. So I will be voting no on this bill. Again, not because of what's in it, but because of what's not in it. And again, Chair Knorr, while I have some concerns about your bill, I can't list a lodge of complaints. For the most part, it's a good bill. We're just not taking care of the people that need it the most. And again, I don't blame you for that. I'm sorry that you were put in this position where you had to pick and choose. I am sorry that you were put in that position when we have an $18 billion budget surplus. With that, I would like to ask for a roll call on the vote.
A roll call has been requested. Not seeing any other individuals. Chair Knorr, would you like to make any last comments before we go to the roll?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I just wanted to echo the same thank yous from Lead New Brindley. I think going back to the numbers, you know, the numbers changes, you know, the numbers also are considered changes based on over time for that. So this is not one time or the other. It's more of a time when those changes happen. The forecasted program tracks that. Members, I just wanted to conclude by saying thank you so much. I would like to start thanking the nonpartisan staff, the fiscal staff, Mr. Berg, thank you so much. The House Research, Ms. Pignelli and Ms. Senderman, thank you. I think you have done a lot of work and back and forth right to fix that we work within our parameters. I wanted to thank our CLA, Sebastian, thank you so much for all your help. Also, the committee administrator, Sean Herring, thank you. And also the GOP research, Jonathan Cotter, thank you so much. I think this is the work that we have done for most of our members, and I also wanted to thank the DFL researcher, Joe Drahan, thank you so much. And I don't want to forget the page, Tenzin, thank you. You have helped us throughout this process. I wanted to thank also DHS and other partner stakeholders who have helped us, you know, shape this bill. It took all of us coming together. So I can't say thank you enough to all of you, but we have a lot of work ahead of us. And I think this is not be all end all. This bill has got a long way to travel before we come back and vote it, because it's going to go to Ways and Means. It's going to go to the floor, and then we will go to the conference. With that, Madam Chair, I just wanted to ask for members to support this bill, and hopefully we will have more dialogue and conversation. Like I promised, Representative Baker, we will continue to have the conversation effective immediately, hopefully that we can solve some of the challenges that we have addressed here. So, Madam Chair, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A roll call having been requested, we will ask Mr. Gonzalez Navarro to take the roll, please.
Chair Knorr?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Lead New Brindley?
No.
Representative Baker?
No.
Representative Clardy?
Aye.
Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Representative Franson?
Franson, no.
Representative Gilman?
Gilman, no.
Representative Hicks?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Cotizo Watun?
Aye.
Representative Pryor?
Aye.
Representative Ryer?
Aye.
Representative Zalesnikar?
No.
There being five no's and nine, five. There being five, nine ayes and five noes, the House File 2847, as amended, is referred to Ways and Means. And I will also make the clarification here that nonpartisan staff is authorized to make any technical changes necessary to reflect the will of the committee, and I believe we have one of those items. With that, we have no further business before the committee.
Madam Chair?
Chair Noor.
I just wanted to note that we may not have further agenda items coming up, so I think in place of just adjourning, we will have, in case of things that come up, that we will come back here. So I think the meeting, this committee will stand on the call of the chair, so in case we come back to do other activities.
All right. With that, we will follow Chair Noor's lead and leave this to the recess to the call of the chair. Thank you, members, for your patience.